Welcome to Search the Scriptures Daily, a radio ministry of the Berean Call featuring Dave Hunt and T.A. McMahon. I'm Gary Carmichael. It's good to have you along. Coming up in this week's program in our Understanding the Scriptures segment, Dave and Tom will continue their in-depth study of the book of Acts and what opened Saul's eyes. In Religion in the News, Russian Church versus Christians. We'll take a look at that story and examine the question, are we messing with what God's blessing? We hope you can stay with us. Our ministry, the Berean Call, offers a wide variety of teaching materials, including books, tracks, audio, and videotapes, and copies of our weekly broadcast on tape or compact disc. You may also subscribe to our monthly newsletter, which we offer free of charge. We'll let you know how to order later in the program. Now, this week's cover article. We continue with our series of programs based on Dave Hunt's just-released book, with installment 11 of Judgment Day. And along with Dave Hunt, here's T.A. McMahon.
Thanks, Gary. You're listening to Search the Scriptures Daily, a program in which we encourage everyone who desires to know God's truth to look to God's Word for all that is essential for salvation and living one's life in a way that is pleasing to Him. If you are a regular listener to Search the Scriptures Daily, you are aware that we're going through Dave Hunt's new book, Judgment Day, Islam, Israel, and the Nations. And presently we are in Chapter 7, titled Hatred's Peace. Now, Dave, what's with that? What do you mean by hatred's peace?
Tom, you know, I'm getting so old, I have such a poor memory, but I'm sure we must have talked about the hatred that the Palestinians, for example, are schooled in against Israel. It's in the mother's milk. They are taught this from their earliest years, earliest months. You know, as soon as they can raise their little fist in defiance, they know that every Jew on the face of this earth must be killed. It's that simple. This is what Muhammad said. They can't get to the last day, which is the day of resurrection, when they will supposedly be raised from the dead and their good deeds weighed in the balance against the bad. You can't get there until every Jew is killed. And I think we've given some of the documentation and probably more in this chapter of the hatred.
Right.
I mean, indescribable hatred of Arabs against Jews. Okay. Yet the world is forcing Israel to make peace with people. Not an Arab map in the world even shows Israel's existence. And yet they're supposed to make peace, give them a little more land, and then they'll be satisfied when absolutely what they want is everything. So what kind of peace are you going to come up with people who hate you, and even after you make peace, supposedly, they will still hate you and want to destroy you?
David also flies in the face of what we've been hearing over and over and over through the news media, that Islam is peace. Islam is peace. And what we're going to get into is facts that show that peace and Islam are so contrary to one another, it's incredible.
There is no peace in Islam, Tom, and I don't want to get ahead of you because I know you want to move systematically through this chapter. But Islam never brought peace anywhere for anyone. And if Israel did not exist, these people would be killing one another, fighting one another, as the warlords do in Afghanistan and as they've been doing in Algeria. They've had a civil war there for the last 12 years. It's killed about 100,000 of their fellows. The war between Iran and Iraq, what they're doing in Iraq right now, Sunnis slaughtering Shiites, Shiites slaughtering Sunnis, and it's not just in Iraq. It's in Pakistan. You don't hear about it often. But you've got Sunnis going into Shiite mosques and blowing themselves up and killing Shiites. And they think they're going to get to heaven for that, to paradise. But the Shiites say no, they went straight to hell. And then you have Shiites going into Sunni mosques in Pakistan and blowing themselves up to kill Sunnis. So peace, there is no peace. I have challenged Muslims. Tell me, where did Islam ever bring peace to anyone? Just one example is all they want. They do not have one example. Okay, so now these people are going to make peace with Israel. The world is forcing Israel into a so-called peace, and ultimately it will lead to the false peace under the Antichrist.
And Dave, this isn't just a latter-day event that somehow, whether it be Sunnis or Shiites, this is all developed and it's gotten far away from Muhammad, it's distanced itself from the Quran. You start off with the war of apostasy. Now, we've talked about that before, but I think it's worth reminding our listeners. The wars of apostasy.
Well, when Muhammad died in 630 A.D., he was actually poisoned by the widow of a man that he had murdered. And he didn't die as a peaceful martyr and so forth.
But Dave, where would you get information like that? Is this something some anti-Muslim would create, a myth that they would promote?
Tom, I remember speaking in Vienna, and I mentioned this, and there were some Muslims in the audience. And they really complained, well, that's not true. So I just give them the web sites where they can go. And I don't have those in my head right at the moment. But just get on the web and then go to Google and ask about it. You'll find all kinds of verification from Muslim authors, Muslim authorities. So this is not made up by some anti-Islamic source. But Muhammad was poisoned by the widow of a man that he had murdered. He murdered a lot of people. Well, since Arabia and Islam had not spread outside of Arabia, since the Arabs had been forced into Islam by the sword, either you convert or we take your head off, now that Muhammad, this peaceful man, was dead, they thought they were free. So they tried to abandon Islam. Now, Muhammad had said, whoever relinquishes his faith, kill him. Abu Bakr, Muhammad's successor, he was the first caliph to succeed Muhammad. Muhammad's father-in-law, we've mentioned that before, father of Aisha, Muhammad's favorite wife, whom he was betrothed to at the age of 6, consummated the marriage when she was 9, still playing with dolls and so forth. Now, he was the first that Muhammad had promised paradise without martyrdom. But anyway, he and his men, in obedience to Muhammad, who said, whoever relinquishes his faith, you kill him. That's why it's called the Wars of Apostasy, because these people had apostatized. And they fought. Arabs fought Arabs. Muslims fought former Muslims, who were all Arabs. And some historians say 70,000 were killed in the Wars of Apostasy. They went on from 630 till about 632 A.D. So these are some of the peaceful foundations of this religion, a religion that is peace. And you are forced into it, and then you are kept in it under threat of death. Now, Tom, I try to tell Muslims, if you could convert the entire world in this manner, it wouldn't mean anything. You see, in Islam, you don't even have to believe. You just have to make the confession. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadan Rasulu Allah. There is no ilah, no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. If you make that confession, even if you don't believe it, we give you the documentation in the book that Muslims are quite pleased. You don't even have to believe it. Just make the confession with your lips. Then you are a Muslim. And if you ever turn from that, you are killed. That is the sentence pronounced by Muhammad, the Quran, and it is still executed today in Saudi Arabia, for example. They take their heads off in Chop Chop Square.
So, I want to get into some of that. You come right out of referring to the wars of apostasy, and really what Chapter 7 seems to be about is all these things that we've said, there's a cover-up. Nobody wants to hear about these things. The press doesn't want to report them. The United States, in many ways, has suppressed information along this line. For example, something that maybe many of our listeners might remember, although the press didn't tie it into Islam, certainly many on the Internet did, and that was this New Jersey family who were basically murdered because of their anti-Islamic stance.
Yeah, this was the Arminius family, father, mother, and two young daughters, and they were stabbed, their throats were slit mid-January 2005 in their home in New Jersey. The father was a Coptic Christian immigrant from Egypt, and he had, well, I would say made a mistake, I don't know, but he was courageous enough and he had enough conviction to do it. He was debating with Muslims on a chat room, and it was a Middle Eastern internet chat room, And he would not back down from the argument. They were arguing with him. He's trying to tell them the truth. They're lying, and he's trying to give them the truth. And there were threats on the internet. You'd better stop this, or we're going to track you down and kill you. And yet, in spite of that, the fact that their throats were slit, it's like a ritual murder. They didn't take their heads off. I guess they didn't have the equipment to do that. The police said, oh, there was no religious motivation in this. In spite of the fact that in New Jersey, a number of violent crimes have been committed by Muslims against those who disagree with them. This is the religion of peace. This is hatred's peace. You know, this is peaceful religion. And if you disagree with us, we'll kill you to prove it. Mm. That's hatred's peace.
Yeah. Dave, another example with regard to the government. I mean, this is a state, certainly New Jersey, but what about the U.S. with regard to the documentary on the Saudi princess that was, she was shot. I think she was shot six times.
Her
in the head.
Lover was beheaded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they tried to suppress it. That's 1977, an Englishman with a miniature camera. He was able to take photographs that shocked the world, a public execution in Jeddah of Princess Michelle.
In Saudi Arabia.
That's right. Princess Michelle bint Fahd bin Mohammed and her boyfriend, Khalid Muhalla. And yes, she was shot six times in the head. He was beheaded. And the photography became part of Anthony Thomas's TV documentary called Death of a Princess, and this threw the Saudis into a fit of rage. Why, how dare you expose this? Well, Tom, if they're ashamed of it, they ought not to do it. And let me just interject to say this is one of my prayers for many years. I pray that the Muslim governments will be embarrassed. They ought to be embarrassed. They ought to be ashamed of this religion. What kind of a God gives people a reward in paradise for murdering innocent women and children? But this is the case with their Allah. And what they are doing around the world, the terrorism and the murder and mayhem and so forth, Islamic governments, Muslims everywhere, ought to be embarrassed, they ought to be ashamed, and there ought to be a cry of outrage from around the world. And yet there isn't. As you just said, Tom, there's a cover-up. Even with the deliberate crash in 1990 of Egypt Air Flight 990, it killed 217. The co-pilot took the controls and deliberately dove this into the ocean. And we know this. We know it from the flight recorder. We have information about this. And yet no one would dare to say that this was to the glory of Allah and to gain his entrance into paradise. So there is a continual cover-up, and our president keeps saying Islam is peace, and it's simply a lie. It is not true. Now, that may be politically correct, but the president ought not to say it. It would be better if he would just say nothing. But as we've pointed out in these programs, the Eid stamp and others, we have tried to butter up the Muslims. We've tried to be nice to them. We've tried to honor them. And what do we get? You can't have a non-Muslim place of worship in Saudi Arabia. In Pakistan, for example, supposedly a secular government. In fact, I was just sitting next to a man on the airplane the other day, and he has friends who were in that church. Some of them were killed in Pakistan, if you remember, when they rolled the hand grenades in. We know people, Tom, friends here of Berean Call, they happened to be away that day, or they might have been killed. So this is this wonderful peace religion, and it continues to be covered up. Well, these are fanatics. These are extremists. But this is not Islam. Indeed, it is. This is what Islam teaches, what the Quran teaches, what the Hadith teaches, what Muhammad taught. And if these are extremists, then Muhammad was an extremist because they're simply following what he did and what he taught. Now, how can the founder of a religion be an extremist? No, this is Islam.
Dave, you have quotes here. Actually, it's an interview that took place on Saudi Arabia's TV channel. And it's a man-on-the-street interview. Let me just read this to our listeners.
Tom, let me interject. We were just having an interview on the phone that will be included in the next edition of the book, Judgment Day, with an Israeli. They went in to take the settlers out. They took no weapons, you know. He was telling us how these people, they wonder, why does the whole world hate us? What have we done that all the world hates us? This is the question in the minds of many Jewish people, not only in Israel, but also in New York or wherever. Very interesting interview.
Right. That sets up exactly what I'm going to read here. Again, it's a man-on-the-street interview from a Saudi Arabian television station, and begins this way. Interviewer, would you, as a human being, be willing to shake hands with a Jew?
You understand, no Jew can set foot in Saudi Arabia, so they're not likely to have the opportunity.
But what kind of mindset even asks a question like that, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Respondent 2, no, because Jews are eternal enemies. The murderous Jews violate all agreements and are full of hatred towards me. Where would he get that? Except, again, as you mentioned earlier, this is ingrained in them from the cradle on.
Yeah. In fact, the Jews don't want to be enemies. They did not attack the Arabs in 1948. They were content to take whatever the UN had given them, and the Arabs attacked them. They do not violate agreements. It's the Arabs who violate every agreement. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Another question to someone else. Would you refuse to shake hands with a Jew? Respondent 4. Of course, so I wouldn't have to consider amputating my hand afterwards. Now, that's not a joke. That's not just a sarcastic comeback. That's a reality. This is what's in this individual's mind.
That's what they've been taught, Tom. That's the mentality. How are you going to make peace with these people?
Another one. If a child asks you, who are the Jews, what would you answer? Respondent 5, the enemies of Allah and his prophet. Respondent 6, the Jew is the occupier of our lands. Respondent 7, the murderers of prophets are eternal enemies, of course. And Respondent 8, if only the Muslims declared jihad, they would turn them, the Jews, into rotten carcasses under their feet. A little bit of edifying TV over in Saudi Arabia.
The time that goes on all the time, and this is what they get, especially in Palestine, other Islamic countries. In fact, if people are interested, they could go to Memory, capital M-E-M-R-I, on the Internet. And that's the Middle East group that all they do is monitor radio, television, so forth. And they give you the English translations from the Arabic.
Here's a sermon on Palestinian Authority television. This is in January 7th, 2005. So this isn't something we drug up from years ago or whatever. This is right where it is today, folks. I'm quoting, the Jews are Jews. Their character and custom are the corruption and destruction of this land. We keep warning you, Jews are a cancer that spreads inside the body of the Islamic and Arab nation. We want to return to the 1948 pre-Israel borders. We can't forget and will never forgive Britain and all governments who assisted that state, that is Israel, to be established on this land, a false state. He went on to declare that America and Israel were to blame for, this is where it gets unbelievable, they're to be blamed for the tsunami that killed more than 265,000 in Southeast Asia. Why? Because there were Muslims that died in that tragic act of nature.
Right. And he goes on, he says, this is Sheikh Ibrahim Madiris in a weekly sermon broadcast over Palestinian Authority TV. And he goes on and says, quote, America today is the sponsor of terror on this land, that is Palestine. America is on the way to the abyss, to hell. Al Jazeera television, which is the most popular one over there, they were serious in offering the idea that the U.S. had set off an atomic bomb under the ocean in order to send this tidal wave, this tsunami on Muslim lands.
Or at the very least, we knew about it, but we refrained from warning them.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Tom, we don't have to argue about it or debate about it. If anyone wants to know what Islam is, just go to Saudi Arabia. We've mentioned before, this is where it began. This is where its holiest sites, Mecca and Medina, are. This is where they make the Hajj, you know, to the Kaaba there.
Pilgrimage, right?
Pilgrimage each year. Well, you have to do it once in a lifetime, supposedly. And this is Islamic law now. You understand, a Muslim can have four wives. No more than four at one time. Now, Ibn Saud, the founder of Saudi Arabia, we're not sure how many he had, but it was somewhere between 200 and 300. But he never violated Islamic law. He never had more than four at once. So as soon as he wanted to get rid of one, all you have to do is say, I divorce you three times, and she's gone. And we give the example, of course, they can beat their wives, and a woman has no rights under Islam. We give you an example of one gentleman over there. His name is Saleh al-Sayyari, 64-year-old Saudi businessman, lives in the desert 500 miles west of Riyadh. He was forced into his first marriage at age 14. He has married 58 women in 50 years. He's forgotten the names of most of them, certainly of his children. He remembers 10 sons and 25 daughters. He has paid out in wedding expenses and divorce settlements more than $1.6 million. He's a very wealthy man, obviously. He keeps each wife in a separate villa, sometimes even in a different town, to keep the peace. He assures each that she is his favorite. He's married women from 30 tribes, and he says, as a leader of a tribe, I can't marry just anybody. And his latest marriage was to a 14-year-old girl, which he calls, quote, the perfect age. There were 10,000 guests. Each divorce is documented with court-issued papers that follow a simple declaration to a wife, you are divorced. He intends to keep on marrying until the number of wives he's acquired equals the number of years he's lived. All perfectly acceptable in Islam. There's no scandal about this. Now, this is what Islam accepts, and this is what Islam does. And a lot of young women in the West who fall in love with some handsome person from a Muslim country and marry him here, and then they're taken back there. They don't know what they're getting into.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, next week we're going to come back to Saudi Arabia, model of true Islam.